Hey there, it's Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli, and I want to chat with you about a key ingredient for a fabulous date night, feeling sexy. And come on, let's be real. What you wear plays a big part in how you rock that confidence. That's why I'm thrilled to introduce you to Quince. Quince brings you premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts starting at just $30, along with washable silk tops, 40-karat gold jewelry, and more. And guess what? All of their goodies are priced 50 to 80% lower than similar brands. By teaming up directly with top factories, Quince skipped the middleman and hands us the saving. Plus, they stick to factories with safe, ethical practices and top-notch fabrics and finishes. How awesome is that? Picking from Quince's website was tough, because they have a ton of fabulous choices. I ended up going for their 100% washable silk sleep dress in champagne. And let me tell you, my husband was floored. He's convinced whoever rocks this is in for a blast. I'm going to record some content on that dress so you can see how fabulous is that dress. Elevate your date night style with Quince. Pop over to quince.com/sexology for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sexology to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sexology.
Welcome to Sexology, a podcast that untangles the science of sex and pleasure. And now, with this week's episode, your host, clinical psychologist, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli.
Welcome back to episode 383 of Sexology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nazanin Mo'oli. Today, we're diving into a topic that impacts many aspects of our lives, how medications can affect our sexual health. Joining us is the brilliant Dr. McNary, a board-certified general psychiatrist with a passion for exploring the intersection of medication management and sexual well-being. We'll be exploring questions like how significant is the impact of medications on our sexual health and what can we do about it? How can we communicate effectively with our healthcare providers about these concerns? And are there differences in how medications affect men and women? Dr. McNary brings a wealth of knowledge and expertise to the table, having completed her training at prestigious institutes like Stanford University and UCLA. She's here to share her insights and practical strategies for managing medication-related sexual side effects while maintaining our overall mental health. And before we're going into the interview, I want to remind you guys that I have a free course for you on how to manage your anxiety inside and outside the bedroom. If you are interested to learn more about these techniques, you can just head to our show notes and check it out. All right, let's get started. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Sexology Podcast. I am so excited to welcome Dr. Josephine McNary to our show. Dr. McNary is a psychiatrist that I often refer to her practice. Their practice have such a holistic approach when it comes to wellness. That's why I thought she will be a wonderful person to tell us about sexual side effect of medication. I know we're just joking about how it can be a boring conversation, but it's one of the questions I get a lot from my clients. They need meds, but they also don't want to have side effects when specifically around sexual health. So tell us more about, what do you see in your practice?
All right. Well, so first off, thank you for having me on. I don't think it's a boring conversation, but I was saying it's a conversation I have a lot. So it's just part of my routine to talk to patients all the time about sexual functioning. And usually it's because there's a lot of concern that the medications that I might give for mood or anxiety symptoms can cause negative impacts in terms of someone's sexual functioning and sexual life. And so if I go into specifics, you know, pretty commonly used medications in my practice and just across the board everywhere are medications called the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So, I mean, I'll list a few if people maybe aren't aware that they're part of this class, but there's things like Lexapro, Celexa, Zoloft, Prozac, Paxil. There's also similar medications called SNRIs, and those might include Effexor and Cymbalta. But a lot of psychiatric medications do have some degree of sexual decrease in sexual functioning associated with them. And in kind of the data shows that about 30 to 40% of people using these specific medications like SSRIs or SNRIs have about a 30 to 40% chance of sexual side effects. In my clinical practice, it feels a lot larger than that. But I would say in my practice, probably 80% of the people who use these medications describe these sexual side effects. And I think it's also important to kind of define what those are. So as a clinician, I'm just not like, oh, you might take these medications and you might get sexual side effects. Not everybody knows what that means. And so it's specific to the individual. But what I usually tell people, usually shows up as low libido, lower interest, delayed orgasm is a big one that people maybe sometimes don't feel comfortable reporting to their doctor. And so I find that even before starting someone on the med, I just am like, hey, this is the possibility. This is what the data shows in terms of risk of these side effects. And this is what these side effects might look like to allow them to kind of have more of a ease of reporting them to me if it happens. It's kind of tricky. And because a lot of people who go on these medications for anxiety or depression, and that's usually what we use them for, are already reporting difficulty in sexual functioning because of their mental health issues. So, I joke with patients, maybe you don't care so much about the sexual side effects from these medications, especially if you're not sexually active because you're just not feeling right. And so I say, usually people say, I don't care about that because it can't get any worse than it already is. But that's not true. I have some patients who, even though they're feeling depressed or anxious, their sexual functioning is so very important to them. And even a slight change in that is intolerable. And so, I think people are in many different spaces regarding that. What I tell people is this idea of, let's get your mood and anxiety symptoms better first. And I'm not ignoring the fact that these medications can cause sexual side effects. But the most important thing for me right now is for your depression, your anxiety to get better. That is causing impairment in your daily functioning. It could be causing suicidal thoughts. Like, these are very serious things. And so we talk about getting them on these meds. I talk about alternatives that might have less of a sexual side effect burden, but that's also a pretty complicated conversation. And then this idea of, okay, at our follow-up visit, I know that these side effects could be a possibility and we're going to talk about it and you'll report back to me what you've experienced. And not 100% of people who take these meds have the side effects. So sorry, that was a long rant.
That was such an important information. You saw me smiling when we were talking about not necessarily everyone cares. I shared with my audience before that, like, I did a fertility treatment. I did IVF, and I know our family has a really strong postpartum depression. So right after IVF, I had this strong, strong depression. I have taken Prozac, 3 years ago, and it had no side effect. And then I started Prozac and I lost my orgasm and I was so scared. I was like, I cannot lose one more thing in my life.
Right. But so you bring up a good point. So what we usually see is that if someone has sexual side effects associated with medication, my first question is okay, how important is this to you? Right. And because I can't assume that they are going to want to go off their meds just because of that. Some people say, oh, absolutely. I cannot tolerate this. I want off. I want an alternative. So that's a subset of people. But other people are like, No, I don't know how important it is to me right now. And it's kind of an ongoing conversation. But so usually, though, what happens, it's not a permanent sexual functioning change. Once people, if they do decide that they want to get off these medications because of the side effects, then usually your sexual functioning kind of goes back to its baseline prior to when you were on those medications. So it's not like you have these sexual side effects and then forever, you're shifted in terms of your sexual functioning.
Well, I think that is also a very important point for people to hear that, right? So it's a side effect while you're taking the medication. It's not something that long term going to impact your functioning. I know that I engage in this conversation with my clients, and sometimes they said there are studies show that long term it can impact it. But my understanding is overall, like, they're reversible. What's been your understanding?
Yes, in general, absolutely. I mean, there are always cases of people who, you know, I'm sure if you find, you can find somebody who, and maybe there's a, like, more than just somebody, but, you know, there are people who probably have, feel like they've had long-term sexual impact from use of these medications. Clinically, we don't see that very often now. And so typically my patients who are on these meds, they get started on them. They maybe stop because of sexual side effects. Their sexual functioning returns to baseline. That really, but I mean, as a psychiatrist, you know, of course, sexual functioning is very important, but you kind of have to think about all the other important things in someone's life. And as I mentioned before, like, in some people, that's number one. Sexual function is number one. Other people, it's like number 50. So it depends on the individual. But then the other really important thing is, like, this idea of, like, going, just trying to make going off because of the side effects. I mean, that's partly why someone would consult with a psychiatrist about this, because there are strategies we can use. And it's not like 100% foolproof that if you start a med, you have sexual side effects. There are some things that we can do to make that better. And so I do want to stress the importance of, it's not, you don't, unless it's incredibly intolerable and you're not wanting to try things to make it better and you just want to go off the medication with the help of your doctor, that's fine. But I do think there is some room to kind of bring in other interventions that might help with that.
And you mentioned such another great point, right? Because if you are, in my case, I'm talking on my own experience. So if you have suicidal thoughts versus delayed orgasm, you know, you want to be around to have an orgasm. So, like, I get that, like, short term, you want to kind of think about what is a priority in this moment.
Right. Right. But also the other, so there's the acute treatment, right, of mental health issues. If someone is suicidal, absolutely. It seems like number one priority is to treat the symptoms that are contributing to those suicidal thoughts, of course, right? So maybe sexual functioning isn't so high on that someone's list in that moment in their life, right? But the other thing that I was thinking as you were bringing the, I think, previous point up is, you know, a lot of these meds are pretty long-term medications that people take. Not always, but it depends on the individual. It depends on their history. But they sometimes are a little bit of a longer-term medication. So the question is, like, during the acute phase, if someone's feeling, like, mentally unwell from anxiety or depression, they're on it, but it's not like an antibiotic that you just take for a few weeks and then you get off of it. And so, and there's we could talk about why that is, but, you know, you're kind of in it for a little bit of the long haul in order to prevent those symptoms from coming back. And so it is true, like, a lot of what I do is, you get someone well on the meds, but then you have to figure out with the patient how someone can tolerate being on these medications a little bit longer term without the burden of so many side effects, right? And there are some people who do just wonderfully on these meds, very limited side effects, if any. They're like, sure, I'll be on it for like another year just to make sure that, you know, I remain mentally well. But there are other people that it's like, you know, they're always kind of battling with these side effects. And it's always this, like, pro, con, like, risk benefit analysis that they do. And it changes over time in terms of what's important to them.
When I think about, like, psychiatric medication, there's a galaxy of options, right? The one that I don't need to tell you that. What I hear from my clients, they often scared of, kind of, like, as you said, like, mood stabilizer for, like, depression, anxiety. But on the other part, I have clients that they are bipolar. And, like, they say, like, when we are in hypomania or we have, like, a manic episode, sex is so great. I have a high desire. So kind of going back on the kind of, like, what kind of a life you want to lead? What are your priorities? And how you can, I think every individual, they can decide for themselves, but, and how can I optimize it? I think the fact that you're inviting people to have this conversation with you, so important. So people then can come back and kind of say, yes, you said this, and this is what I experienced. But I experience you overall being a very open person. So it's easy to talk to you. But I know with many physicians, people don't have that experience. So how can people advocate for themselves if they're a kind of psychiatrist? They don't bring up the sexual side effect and now they're struggling.
Yeah, that's a hard question because there's a big issue with accessibility to care in terms of mental health treatment. So yes, in the perfect world, it is hard to see a specialist and especially a psychiatrist. And so in the perfect world where there is, you know, incredible accessibility to these things, you're seeing a psychiatrist, you feel like you're not being heard, you feel uncomfortable. I think a sign of feeling like maybe you're not with the best fit for you as a clinician is that if you feel uncomfortable bringing up your concerns about being on the medication, or you don't feel like you've had, you know, a meaningful conversation about what it means to you to be on these medications, because there's a cost involved with taking these things. And it's always like, ultimately, people do something because the benefits outweigh the negatives. And I think a lot of, in my practice, what I do is like, a lot of the good conversations happen when someone feels like their priorities kind of are shifting and they're getting to a point of saying, you know, maybe it's not worth it to me anymore to be on this. And I think that's just human nature, right? So I think if an individual doesn't feel comfortable just bringing something up to their psychiatrist, you're not really advocating for yourself if you can't do that, right? And so, yeah, in the perfect world, just say, oh, well, find a psychiatrist who can do that. But I know that thing is, sorry, if you have a clinician that you see like a therapist or a psychologist, maybe they can be like, hey, this is really important to you, all these experiences from these medications. If you don't feel like comfortable bringing it up to your doctor, like you feel comfortable having me have a conversation.
I think that also is another kind of like great point of like asking someone, talking to someone that you feel comfortable so they can advocate for you. And that is complicated. I know many clinicians, they're not comfortable about talking about sex themselves. Many people have these values that for me, sex is not important. So they kind of in a way convey that to the clients in a kind of like an implicit way, and they might not be comfortable talking about these things. But for the clients that they are comfortable bringing it up, I often hear that there's a range of different approaches that's out there. Sometimes people kind of like talk about their physician recommending adding another medication. Sometimes people talk about changing of timing. How effective are these kind of strategies? Are these kind of like well-known path, or it's more of a trial path that people take on?
Almost all we do is trial and error on it. I mean, that's not totally true, but it kind of is. I'm not sure if I'm answering this question succinctly, but I mean, I have so many thoughts in terms of, I mean, there's clear algorithms that we use, right? It's someone is depressed or anxious. There is a clear algorithm, assuming the individual is open to wanting to try those choices. But you assume if they're in your office, they're interested in medication treatment. So there's like some algorithms we use. So that's why a lot of people go to their primary care doctor for medication, because typical depression, anxiety, primary care doctors treat all the time. Actually, they treat them more than psychiatrists do. I mean, the primary care doctors give the bulk of mental health medication. So, but I think where it becomes more complicated is if the response that someone has isn't kind of typical of the majority of cases, or if someone is having these side effects that really, and I'm not just talking about sexual side effects, other side effects that just make it impossible for them to have a real meaningful trial on a medication. That's when, you know, there are still algorithms, but that's when it kind of creativity creeps in a little bit more and experience, right? And so, you know, it's, as a physician, it is like an art of kind of really knowing what to do at the right time. And how to present that to somebody too, and having that person feel like they're in a partnership with their prescriber. And it's not just the prescriber's like, you got to do this. I think people should leave, or ideally people should leave a visit with a medication provider with this understanding that they've been heard, that they really understand why they're doing this, and they feel supported that if it doesn't work, or if there's something about it that feels uncomfortable, they have a partner. They can call their doctor and be like, this isn't working for me. This doesn't feel good. Like, what do you suggest? And so I think that's a really important thing.
Absolutely. You're right that it's part of it. It's kind of people lived experiences, the impact of it on themselves, the medication, but also knowing that they have a consultant, expert person that can help them to guide them to make informed decision based on, okay, if I don't want to take this medication, what would that look like? If I want to take something else, what would that be like? And I think that partnership, as you said, is really important. And sometimes because of the pressure that comes with managed care, people feel like, okay, we have 15 minutes with our physician and we have 10 presenting problem, and that can kind of like make things more complicated for all parties involved. So for our listeners that are listening to this kind of episode and they think, okay, my medication has some side effect, what would be the next step I need to do? Like, should I bring it to my physician? If I'm not comfortable, what should I do? What is the next first steps that you recommend?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm going to state the obvious. Talk to your doctor, right? Try to, like, you know, the goal is to have an open conversation about what the side effects are and how they impact your life. And you had mentioned before, we were talking about maybe a physician's personal life priorities are very different than the patient's priorities, right? And so, you know, at least to be able to feel like you can advocate for yourself, being like, these are my priorities. And I feel like these side effects are like really causing issues in my life, or maybe not. Maybe it's not so extreme, but it's something, right? And so I guess it's more just, you know, trying to be open about your experience, right? As much as you feel comfortable and safe doing so.
And also, I would say, like, share it with your partner, because I can imagine that, you know, that at times people are feel so shameful about the medication and they're not talking about it with a partner, and then they don't get the support that they can get in the bedroom.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I was just thinking, this happens a lot with patients. And I feel like I'm very open with my patients. I hope my patients feel comfortable kind of saying anything to me. But even with, I feel like, good relationships with my patients, it frequently happens. A patient comes back for a follow-up, they're going to be thin. They're always like, feel so ashamed and guilt-ridden. They're like, okay, I feel bad saying this, but I went off my medication. And I know you're going to be upset. And I'm just like, I'm not upset. Like, it's just part of it, right? And even though I give people an invitation to reach out to me whenever, to let me know, that doesn't always happen because it is a personal decision. And so if someone is having dissatisfaction with their medication, it's likely they'll probably eventually just get off of it without a doctor's recommendation. And some people, it's okay. But other times, like, it really puts them at pretty high risk for other important and serious things that could happen in terms of, like, mental health status. And so, yeah, I just, it, you know, that this idea about compliance is about feeling comfortable about what you're doing. So I think it's just this important thing to always report in any type of medical scenario where you're asking to do an interview, you've been asked to do an intervention, like, you should advocate for yourself if there's a problem with it, because that leads to noncompliance. And that's, you know, not the best outcome medically either.
As a therapist, I often also hear the same thing, to asking my client, what happened to your medication? And they say, you know, I stopped it last month. I was like, oh, what happened? They had some side effect. Or even small thing, like, I'm saying small things, but really, and I've been through this thing myself, going through medication, like a tremor in hand or shakiness. They say, oh, I didn't like it, I stopped it. But it can have profound impact if you're stopping medication kind of like without consulting with your physician. And there are behavioral strategies that people can do that can help with addressing some of the issues, whether it's a sex therapy kind of like recommendation, whether it's a sex toy they're using, all sorts of different things that can help them to have the satisfying sexual experiences they want with other types of assistance. So that's something that I often see.
I totally agree. And I know I wanted to bring this up, and I'm going to bring it up right now. So I had, before we were recording, I was like, I want to talk about this, but this discussion of sexual functioning and sexual dysfunction is multifactorial most of the time, right? And so oftentimes when someone comes in is like, okay, I've been on these meds, I really feel like my sexual functioning is a big problem. I listen, but I also say, well, what was your functioning like before you started the medication? Were there issues? What? And oftentimes we come to an understanding that maybe there were some issues sexually, but the medication has just made it worse and more noticeable and more unbearable, right? And so that's why it's really important to bring in sex therapists in terms of saying, look, okay, so it's gotten worse, clearly. We will all agree that that's true. But there's some other things you can also work on that might bring you back to your baseline or even better than that if you work on other interventions. And so, yeah, I think it's super important. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to stop my meds. My sexual functioning isn't that great. But you also are like, what are the other underlying issues going on that we can make better?
I love that. It's kind of like approaching it from the various different kind of like parts and also like at times I tell people it's like a point system. So if you're kind of deducting some point from physiological part, you can add things from a sexual erotic mind part. So there's different things people can do. And as we talked about, the more open they are with people about their sexual health, the more solutions hopefully they can get. And the other thing is like, even if they're talking, I would imagine to their physician or to psychologist, is saying that, okay, if you don't know about this, who else I can ask? Is there anyone that you know that can give me with the information? So they kind of feel that like there is this kind of opening that door, that they're open to receive resources. On that note, I know you have your own show. I know you have lots of great content out there. You offer mentorship.
You're one of my first guests. Actually,
I loved being on your show. I still hear from people listening to that episode. And overall, I think what I love about your practice and yourself is like you have such a holistic approach. Not holistic in a mean non-scientific, but preventative approach, which is so important in this age and time. So for our listeners, and they want to learn more about you, about your content, what are some of the places they can go to?
Well, thank you for asking. And it's fine. So I have this podcast. It's called Mind Stories. It's called actually Cal Psychiatry Presents Mind Stories. And I interview different specialists, mainly therapists, psychologists, but not all, about their treatment specialty. So you were on years ago when we talked about sex. I think it was like, what is sex therapy? And we should do an updated version of that.
I would love that.
But it's really a way, I mean, I started it, I have, I think, about 150 episodes at this point, and I really started it as a way to highlight how complex the world of psychology is and how incredible that we have all these great specialists in very specific things. And so especially in a place like Los Angeles, where, things are different with remote accessibility and all that, but there are so many great specialists in LA. And there are so many, it's just, I love having these conversations with my colleagues about what they do. And I use it as a database for my patients. If they come in and I'm really thinking that a specific focus type of therapy would be really important to them, I use it as a resource for my clients all the time. And I hope other people use it as a resource to really kind of understand how a clinician might potentially work with you.
Amazing. So what podcast is one place, and you have a wonderful group practice that's all over. It's called Cal Psychiatry. So we leave a link to those resources in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming in this show. It's always so lovely to chat with you. And thank you for being so generous with everything you do.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's actually, I'll tell you a secret. It's more exciting to be a guest than a host. So thanks for the opportunity.
It was so sweet. Thank you. Before we wrap up, I want to stress the importance of advocating for your sexual health. It's a vital part of your overall well-being, and you deserve to have open, shame-free conversations about it. It doesn't need to be anything complicated if you want to bring this concern with your physician. Maybe if you feel shy practicing this script with a friend, with your therapist, or even your partner can be helpful. You can start with saying, I've noticed some changes in my sexual health lately, and it's been waiting on me. I'm experiencing, and then talk about 2-3 symptoms that you have, and add that I'm worried about how it's affecting me. Can we discuss and explore treatment options together? If they say we don't know, it's not within my area of expertise, then I can ask them, do you know anyone that can help me with this? Remember, your doctor is there to support you, and discussing your sexual health should never feel shameful or taboo. And don't forget to check out our show notes for a free course on stress management. It's full of practical tips to help you navigate life challenges with resilience and grace. Thank you for joining us on Sexology. Stay empowered, stay curious, and keep embracing your sexual well-being. Until next time, take care.
Thanks for listening to Sexology Podcast. For more great content, visit www.sexologypodcast.com. Please be advised that information presented on this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health provider.